Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
That this system in which we live in, which is the property-based capitalism, the long nightmare of patriarchy, has been a huge failure of our species.
That's the voice of Marcelo Saavedra. On this week's show, we speak to Marcelo about the need to protect Mother Earth for the next seven generations. So stay tuned.
You are listening to Latin Waves. We are very privileged this morning to have Dr. Marcelo Saavedra. He's a professor at a School of International Development and Globalization Issues in the Faculty of History at the University of Ottawa. Very privileged to have you on our program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Sylvie. It's very good to be with you and with people listening to this broadcast.
Today we face a world with many crises, and many have said that the way out of this problem is perhaps a new commons, an idea of a shared community. Can we talk a little bit about what that would entail? What does community look like, or perhaps what can community feel like from an indigenous perspective?
Yes, thank you for the question. It's very important. Yes, we are in a time in which many crises are converging. And, you know, I think the main crisis we have to deal with is the addiction of the Western world to petroleum. And, you know, many people say that the hugest crisis that there is is overpopulation, but that's only a crisis of, I would say, third degree. The first one is addiction to energy, to petroleum, you know, because all the solutions also are coming in the shape of, you know, providing energy for the Western model of development, and that's what we have to deal with. We fail to understand that petroleum or other energy sources belong to the commons, and they were there to be shared not amongst only all the species inhabiting this planet, but also, and more importantly, with our future generations up to the seventh skin, as we say here on Turtle Island. And we have forgotten that, and we have used up the deposits of energy, the pockets of sun that lie beneath the earth, which is petroleum. And nowadays we are even, trying to extract that energy from places we shouldn't even touch, like the tar sands, because we don't respect the sacredness of Mother Earth's blood, which is petroleum. So I agree with you in the sense that we have to create a new perception about what the commons are, but I think we should begin our journey by acknowledging that the commons have been there like all the time, and we just fail to see them like that. You know, I remember one of my ancestors, Inca Tupac Yupanqui, he said that we were going to shift from understanding the land as a sacred place to living this perception of profane time. So there was a shift of perception. You know, nowadays we talk about time like all the time, it's redundant, but that's the way it is. And we measure everything in terms of time, even distances, which are basically the expression of space. We nowadays measure them in terms of how long it's going to take us to get from one point to the next. So that's, nowadays we live in a world defined by time. And that's something that we didn't have in our ancestral times. So we need to recognize that we are people coming from other earth, that we are people coming as expressions of the four sacred elements from space, from places, from geographies. And once we remember that, we're going to grow our roots, hopefully in a very deep way, and we are going to be anchored in the land, and we are going to defend that land. And I think that's the basis of community, being local, being anchored in the land that we inhabit. And that's going to provide us also with our identity. And the anchoring comes by just acknowledging who we are and grow our roots in space, on Mother Earth, on Pachamama. And I think that's a huge step forward in terms of creating community and also in terms of understanding who we are as human beings in our journey on this planet.
When you're talking about our need to anchor ourselves in the land and our need to create communities that recognize responsibility mm-hmm. of living in balance, that also calls on another responsibility, and that is of seeing with eyes of parity, with eyes that recognize the many others that we make into outsiders in our communities. So how do we overcome the inherent conflicts that define communities when our identity is solely focused on the othering of other people, whether it's humans versus nature, settlers versus immigrants, you know, the whole dichotomy that we create around being.
Yeah, exactly. I think you expressed it very well. We always see the other as a conflictual relation, you know, and that, I think that's given by the premises that we live on in within the Western model of civilization, that the counterparts of our existences are always in competition with us, and you know. And I think, for instance, that the work of Darwin has been largely misunderstood because this has been applied to everything, and people, scientists and, you know, anthropologists and the, you know, people who study the work of Darwin, they have assumed that he was only perceiving the competition amongst the species. But if you read Darwin, you are going to see that he not only paid attention to the competition part of, you know, the expression of a species coexisting with each other, but also he mentioned the process of symbiosis between these species. And that's the thing that we have also acknowledged in our indigenous visions, that we are just a reflection of all of our relations. We are the other. It's not a competition. It's actually, it is opposite but complementary situation. In our language, in my language, Aymara, we call this chachawarmi, which basically translates into man-woman or woman-man, not woman and man, but it's just like the coming together of both forces, not into one, but into two, into a parity relation. There's always two things to everything in this universe. You know, there's like the Big Bang that started to expand the universe, and eventually there's going to be the big crunch. You know, things are expanding, but that's just one movement. It has to be complemented with its opposite expression, which is contraction. If you see the waves of an ocean, it's the same thing. It expands and then it contracts, that we call the tides of the ocean. And you can see that even in your own body, you know. Your body is pulsating like all the time, you know, your heart is working, you know, like full time until it stops and you start to walk on the realm of the spirit. But as long as you are alive, your heart is expanding and contracting like all the time. So we see this like in everything that exists in this universe and probably in other realms as well. You know, I don't want to use the word universe because it gives the sense that it's only one version, whereas we think that we live in an omniverse, you know, many dimensions that we don't even acknowledge because we have this very narrow understanding of things. But you know, the point I want to make is that we are the coming together of two forces, you know, in many things. For us the notion of parity is so central to our vision, There's always two things to everything, and we have to acknowledge that. And in one level, in a very cosmic level, we are always the reflection of all other beings, both human and non-human, on this planet. For instance, on one level, we are just the product of our ancestry, you know, and you can track back our ancestry up to the first animal that came to land, or you can track your ancestry, 13 generations down to your grandfathers and grandmothers 13 generations ago, or you can even just, track your ancestry just to your grandparents if you want. But it's important that we acknowledge that. And also you can see that you are the beginning of your generations to come. And if you are going to be a prudent ancestor, you should think of your future generations up to the seventh skin, as, you know, the Turtle Islanders say, or in my culture we say up to the 13th skin, you know. And nobody does that, you know. We don't think about the children. Like nowadays in my courses, I'm going to be talking about nuclear waste, you know. And when I see that, it gets me so sad, because we have totally failed our future generations by engaging in nuclear activity. You know that plutonium, which is used to create nuclear energy, or uranium, it's like 100,000 years. If you just can imagine that, it's almost unimaginable. Yet, the waste that we are going to produce by, you know, trying to solve the problem of energy by using nuclear forces, is going to last for 100,000 years. That's just crazy, you know? And the subproduct of using uranium is plutonium, which is an element that doesn't exist in nature. It was created by us. And its life, it's like 1 million years, if you can just imagine that. You know, human beings, the Homo sapiens sapiens species, has been around for 200,000 years. So imagine 1 million years. We are living waste, very particular to industrial civilization, that's going to last that long. And we don't even have a clue what our seventh generation is going to be like. So we have totally forgotten everything. We have forgotten what it means to be human on this planet. And that's why we are to be held responsible for all the mess that we are leaving behind. And that's the other thing that we have to understand, that the notion, and let me just, you know, make a parenthesis to define what rights are, because that's the other notion that we live when we belong to a national state. Well, the notion of rights is not to be found in indigenous mature cultures. Rather, is to be found only in the Western project of our civilization, because they needed this notion of rights so they could bring about the encroachment of the commons, and they then bring about also the notion of property, of private property, so they could build their civilization. So they did so, you know, and they imposed the notion of property, and I would say the notion of property as a basis to develop the capitalist system. And we forgot that before the notion of rights, we had a very simple notion of responsibility. Responsibility comes from the Latin respondere, which means give back. So whatever we took from Mother Earth, because Mother Earth provides us with everything that we need, we always made sure that we gave back to Mother Earth. You know, and that was a very, I would say, a very feminine act of giving back to Mother. And that's where responsibility comes about. And this is like a tendency of females, because they also have to look for their children. So they have to be able to respond, responsibility. And that's one of the things that we have forgotten. And we have created these beasts called states that are based, you know, they are founded on the notion of rights. And we have forgotten about the notion of responsibilities. So the presence of indigenous peoples nowadays on the planet is to remind us that for, you know, hundreds and thousands of years, we lived according to our responsibilities because we had to take care of our offspring. And nowadays, I think there is the awareness that there's this sort of a dichotomy and that we have to resolve it because our existence depends on bringing about a new way of perceptions about our role of humans on this planet. And that goes through acknowledging responsibility, being responsible to be a good ancestor. I think I would summarize, you know, the discourse I have as an indigenous professor just in that very simple phrase. Be responsible to be a good ancestor, you know, and I think that's the contribution I would have to make in a very summarized way.
When I think about the idea of being an ancestor and what that would entail, I think of this circular connection, that we're part of a circle of life, that, you know, we receive what our ancestors left for us, but in turn we're those ancestors living for, you know, the next 7th or 13th generation, depending on what mature culture you come from. So can we talk a little bit about the kind of mindset that would lead us to live in a way in communion with the world, in communion with the sacredness of the earth and all our relations?
Yeah, you know, the word you use, I think, is a very proper one, communion. But we have to change the substance of this communion, because the issue is not to become one. That's just like a mirage of the Western way of thinking, that, you know, things can be reduced to one thing, to single things. Like, for instance, in physics, they are trying to find the building blocks of matter as individual expressions of matter. They will never find one. You know, they just found the boson Higgins not long ago, and they think that that's like the most important individual component of matter, because it gives actually, it is actually the repository of matter, this particle. But I am sure that in time they are going to find other components to the boson Higgs, because things don't express themselves through individual expressions, through units. They express always in twos. So the boson Higgs must have around another particle that pairs up with the boson Higgs to become the repository of matter. So in that sense, the communion that we are speaking about, it has to be the acknowledgement that you come together with your pair. And that's very easy to see. You know, you were born because there was a pair that had went through a process of loving each other, and that gave birth to your individual, or rather to your, you know, personal self, to your own body and life, you know. But also, as you grew up, you came in a situation of parity with many other things, with your husband or wife, with your children, with your environment, with Mother Earth, with your spirit. So there is this journey that we are all going to take, and it's a cosmic journey in which we are going to find our identity, and that goes through the process of understanding who you are and what you are and what your mission is on this life. And that comes when you go very deep into yourself and you acknowledge that you are just a reflection of all your relations. You are not an individual isolated entity that came about to this universe just like that, totally independent of everything else. The opposite is true. You came about after, you know, our species developed from our ancestors, the simian ancestors, and also when we became animals, and when the first, you know, the first animal came from the ocean to the land, and so on. There is always a pairing up. There was always the you know, the cosmic law of parity. You know, even if you observe deep space, you are going to see that, you know, big stars come into being and they disappear because they are dancing to the tune of parity. So I think that's a very important point in our existences, that we understand that that communion is going to take place when you see that you are just the product of a parity force. You know, in our prophecy, in our legends, in the Andes or in the Amazon, we have this prophecy of the re-encounter of the eagle and the condor. And in its textual understanding, it is that our ancestors knew that in a time of crisis, actually, we call that the Pachacuti, the cosmic upheaval, the indigenous peoples of Turtle Island were going to meet again with the indigenous peoples of the Abya-Yala, or what modernly it's called the Latin America. And that's happening, you know, that's the coming together of the eagle and the condor. But a more profound level, at a contextual reading of this prophecy, the eagle and the condor is the coming together of your two sides, of your two beings, to become who you are, to become your true identity. And when you are going to attain that, you are going to understand that we are on this plane to be true ancestors, to be like a bridge between your ancestry and your children. And it's a very simple understanding and a very simple teaching. You know, there are many expressions of this, even in the Western world, but I think that's what we have to aim at if we want to be in communion with our relations and even with our own selves. We have to find the bridge between our thought processes and also with our heart. Actually, we have to think with our hearts. And that's when you are going through your own process of meeting the condor and the eagle in our language, you know. So I think that's a key understanding in our journey in these lives as human beings.
That's beautiful. We've come to the end of our interview, and I just wonder if you could, in closing perhaps, express a prayer or a blessing for the shift in mindset that must take place that can usher us into a world of living in coexistence with the natural world and with one another.
Yes, I would like to say a prayer because of the mistakes we have been doing in this industrial civilization. So I want to ask Mother Earth to be gentle in her communications with us, her children. I want to ask Mother Earth to try to keep us in good understanding of the language she's expressing. She doesn't have a spoken language like we humans do. So we are not going to get, you know, written instructions as to what it means to be human and it means to be her children. She's going to be speaking, in quotation marks, the only language she knows, which is all these natural disasters, as we call them. She's going to talk like that. And today, she's speaking very loudly. She's sending us messages and signals that we need to change the way we perceive her, the way we perceive everything around us. So I ask her to be compassionate with her children, human and non-human, that we are going to make a huge effort to understand what she is trying to convey in her message, but that she spares us humans and the other nations that inhabit this planet from the very tough language she is using nowadays, because this is only the beginning of her speech. This is only the beginning of her communications, of her trying to make us understand that this system in which we live in, which is the property-based capitalism, the long nightmare of patriarchy, has been a huge failure of our species, and we have to correct this, and we have to be very attentive to listen to her words, in quotation marks, with our hearts, because our hearts do not only speak, they also hear. So we need to acknowledge that, and we have to be in tune with our ultimate mother, Pachamama. And that would be my prayer.
Thank you, and blessings to you for teaching us and modeling how to be a good ancestor.
Thank you so much, Sylvia.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
We have come to the end of our program. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwavesmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources, or to support our efforts by making a safe PayPal contribution. I am Sylvia Richardson. Thanks for listening.